This is the Topics and Takes podcast with WRALSportsFan.com's Lauren Brownlow and Marilyn Payne. You can download this weekly podcast at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app on iTunes or the Google Play stores, or Saturday mornings at 9 on 99.9 The Fan. Now, here's Topics and Takes with Lauren and Marilyn.
This is Topics and Takes. I am Lauren Brownlow from 99.9 The Fan and WRALSportsFan.com.
And I'm Marilyn Payne from WRALSportsFan.com with a full voice and full energy this week, unlike last
week.
Look
at you. Yeah, you sound great. We're coming off the NBA draft. That's the big news of the day. But I don't know. That's not what I was told on Twitter last night.
Oh, good.
I was actually told that there's some bigger news out there. Both Steve Wiseman of the Durham Herald Sun.
Oh, then that means it's real.
And Amy Yu from the ACC offices were both intrigued by this developing storyline.
And that gives me a better idea of what it might have to do with.
Yes.
Love you, Amy.
Yes, she was very... First of all, she was fascinated by the pocket square. And then Steve Wiseman chimes in and says, are you questioning the fashion sense of Savannah Chrisley or whatever her name is? And I'm like, I don't know, I'm not. Like, I had seen a picture of him and his girlfriend, and, like, she looks lovely. So I was like, no, I'm not questioning her fashion sense. She looks very nice. And then I start doing a little more digging, and apparently Amy's like, wait, Luke Kennard is dating her? Like, and apparently she's this reality television star from the show. I'm guessing it's Chrisley. Chrisley Knows Best. I guess she's the daughter on the show.
But yeah, so that's how it was explained to me. I was actually at the Durham Bulls game during the draft, which is funny because I was also at the Durham Bulls game during the NFL first round draft. I realized it when I was there because I was like, I got to stop going to these when I'm just only on my phone paying attention to where people are getting drafted. And one of my coworkers who is new to WRAL, Ellis Clary's her name, is like, you guys know Chrisley Knows Best. It's that reality show. And we're like, no, never actually heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
I'm not up on my reality show. Like, Southern Charm's kind of the most obscure one that I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
I think they live in Atlanta.
They do. Wikipedia.
So I think it's that. Maybe it's like an Atlanta take on that.
Wikipedia explains it as the lives of wealthy Georgia real estate mogul Todd Chrisley and his family. The show formerly took place in Roswell and Alpharetta, Georgia, both near Atlanta. So
where is it now if it formerly took place there?
It's in its fifth season, which is mainly filmed in Nashville, Tennessee. But it's, yeah, I don't really fully get it. But the reviews were very good on this show, actually, which I was surprised by.
Well, I mean, you know me. I'll sign off.
Best family series since Honey Boo Boo, which I don't know.
No.
I don't know what that means. I didn't know that was good. Or since The Osbournes, apparently, which I did
watch.
That's
better.
And I did enjoy The Osbournes, actually. So,
okay. So my issue, when I was shown one picture of this girl with Luke, her picture from her Instagram, and then she's got one picture with his family, the Kennards.
Yeah. This is a new relationship.
Well, so the first thing that I said when I saw the girl was she looks much older than him. Wikipedia tells me she's 19 years old, so I think I'm going to have to step off on that. That's fine. She doesn't look as old as she isn't as old as she looks. Same Savannah.
Some
we'll talk about
that
it later.
Some of that is that whole Southern vibe like thing, I think, with like a lot of makeup.
I mean, she's sophisticated.
And,
she looks she looks older than she is.
She dresses older than she is as well.
Like money will do that to you.
Yep. I wouldn't know, but yeah, she's still, you know, she has a girlish vibe.
I just don't trust it, and I'll just say this. I don't think that this is a long-standing relationship. I say that based off of an interaction that I had with a woman who was Kennard's mom and a girl who was
his girlfriend,
related to him in a romantic sense in the Cameron Indoor bathroom. Like, we were all checking our makeup at the same time because it was really humid and rainy outside. So that was not 3 months ago, or maybe probably right at 3 months ago. It was toward the end of the regular season. I don't like the let me go date reality TV star right before I get drafted in concept.
Yeah.
But the good news is we know she's got her own money, so maybe it's not about that.
Oh, I don't think it's about. By the way, buried lead here, Luke Kennard's sister is adorable.
Like, I looked at the picture of the girlfriend with his family, and I was like, she looks just like her mom. And Ellis goes, that's his mom. And I was like, oh my God. So
she
just looks good with his family, which
she really does.
I love couples that look alike. It's a weird
thing.
Well, it's because me and my brother and my dad dad and my mom all kind of like dark hair, pretty dark eyes for the most part. Like, we're not a family that looks like we're not related, even though we're not even a family together like that. Like, my parents have always been divorced. But I think it's part of like this psychological need to have a complete family picture in my mind has to look together or look alike. Uh-huh. That having been said, I'm not saying I'm against other relationships. I just always think it's a really pretty picture. And new girlfriend looks great with the Kennards family. I'm sure that doesn't matter at all.
Well,
it's still
interesting.
Weird to me.
Apparently, they've been sharing playful tweets, according to E! Online, since middle of May.
Wait, how did we not pick up on this then?
Well, I don't follow her, so I don't know.
Oh, that's how. It doesn't show up in our timelines.
Right. It doesn't show up.
I also don't follow him, actually, now that I've said that.
I don't follow him either. I did follow Grayson Allen last night after he joked that he has 2 or 3 years of eligibility left.
Oh, what?
Yeah. I laughed out loud at that.
When did he say that?
He said, someone asked him like something like, coming out of the draft, this is going to be you next year or something. And he said, I have 2 or 3 years. He said, I don't know. I might have 2 or 3 years of eligibility left. I laughed. I was like, immediate follow. Like, I think someone said, he must be on that Emile Jefferson path. But yeah.
I've been telling you, I like Grayson. He's got a better personality than he gets credit for.
Yeah.
All right. Other people with girlfriends that we got to pay attention to. Brooks Koepka won the U.S. Open on Sunday. And in the middle of a lot of people trying to figure out maybe who he was, someone had told Fox's broadcast who his actual girlfriend was.
Yeah, apparently.
I say that about Brooks because it was his first major win, and he is a little bit of a lesser-known golfer. No one that is a household name was in contention for that championship by like the end of the day Friday, I believe. So amidst this at 1.7 way tie, people are trying to figure out which names they need to get familiar with going into Sunday. And was it Joe Buck
yeah,
didn't get familiar with the girlfriend's name that he needed to know going into the
what happened was he saw him hugging his current girlfriend. And he called her the name of Brooks Koepka's ex-girlfriend. So it's not like he hadn't done some research. I guess it just wasn't quite up to date.
I'll say this. In defense of Joe Buck, I had Googled Brooks to make sure I had his age right for the breaking news alert that I had to send for WRL Sports Fan. And his old girlfriend is who was listed as his girlfriend. His Wikipedia page is like the length of like one whole screen. Yeah. So you can see it all right there. And soccer player from FSU. That's who it says. The Wikipedia is wrong, guys. Maybe that's where the bad information came from. Because not 10 minutes before the mistake was made, I had noticed the same thing.
Look, that's an easy, you know, it's an easy mistake. I think most people, he did get a little roasted on Twitter, Joe Buck. But I think it was mostly in fun. Like, I don't think anybody was like saying that Joe Buck is a garbage broadcaster because that happened.
I agree.
They were just sort of like having a little fun with it. And Joe Buck actually went on the Dan Patrick show this week and said that he's done worse.
Oh, good.
and he made a worse mistake once. He asked Tony Womack, a baseball player, at the end of a division series game when he was hugging a woman down on the field, I couldn't really see, and he's hugging this woman, and I said, hey, Tony, I can't imagine how that feels. Who are you hugging down there? Is that your mom? And then the needle came off the record, and he goes, no, that's my wife. So, yeah. He's right. That is not the worst mistake
he's
made.
Joe Buck should just not speak about women on broadcasts that are not identified parts of the broadcast.
Considering the way some other like broadcast entities speak about women on broadcasts, I'm good with Joe speaking on
them. Actually a pretty
good point. At least he doesn't go, hello, hot lady in the stands. Let's zoom in on her repeatedly.
But on that note, I will say this about...
Have you seen Brooke Koepka's...
He upgraded. If we're talking about...
I don't know, man. This girl seems really cool.
In terms
His ex seems cool.
Physical attractiveness, I think he upgraded. In terms of everything else, jury's still out. Because he went from like all-American soccer player who plays on a pro team to model. Who is lesser known and I think wants to be an actress.
Mm,
so...
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just saying. They don't look alike, so if you had seen a picture of one, you would have immediately known.
By the way, neither do Kennard's ex and his current girlfriend. They do not look alike.
I get really thrown off when people don't have a type, because I have a type.
Do you?
Yes. Dark hair, dark eyes. If blue eyes get thrown in, it's a major curveball. I don't like blondes. I have never... It's just straight down the middle. Not too good-looking, because it makes me uncomfortable, but generically good-looking white male. Like, it's just... Those are the guys that I am... almost always most attracted to physically. And I've been that way since I was like 11.
Yeah, I just, you know, I always thought I had a type maybe, and then it just never never kind of settled that way.
Out.
Yeah. I mean, I dated, you know what my husband looks like now, Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Before him, I dated a very white person from North Dakota.
Okay.
Who wore jorts. So I don't have a type either, clearly.
I mean, I think most people don't, but I just do. And so when people don't, it throws me off. I don't know why.
It's all right.
I know. Blah, blah, blah. Things. I should expand my horizons. Leave me alone.
I mean, we kind of buried the lead a little, I guess. Luke Kennard went 12th, I believe, to the Detroit Pistons.
I'm so sorry.
It's so funny though, because I was actually I was on the radio earlier in the day, and they were asking me about do you like Malik Monk and Luke Kennard, and I was like, and they were like, who should go first, whatever, and I was like, you know, I could see Luke Kennard going before Malik Monk, and they were like, no, there's no way. I mean, I was a pick off, so just saying, literally a pick away from that happening. The Charlotte Hornets take Malik Monk, which I think is a great pick. I don't think they expected him to still be available. And I was just more impressed that Charlotte like did a good thing and didn't screw it up
right.
until later when they like traded, they drafted Frank Jackson and people got all excited, and then they traded down like 9 spots when they had traded up to get that pick in the first place. So whatever, I guess. I mean, great. So, and then they took Dwayne Bacon, which I don't like.
Why?
I don't know. I guess they like people that don't shoot well. Judging by their current roster, they do like that. So Malik Monk was the exception.
We were sitting in the stands at DBAP, and Charlotte was next, and I was flanked by 2 Charlotte natives, and the guy and his date behind us, he was in the process of explaining baseball to her, and Shirley didn't have his phone out, was definitely like trying to pay attention to what was going on, and we're all 3 on our cell phones monitoring the draft,
yeah.
And we start talking about Charlotte, and he's like peeking over at us, and then finally they picked Malik Monk, and not a second after Ellis finished her sentence of they took, and he didn't hear the name, he like leans up in between us and goes, who did they take? We said Malik, and he did that elated like they did it right response, just knowing that he was left.
There's a lot of shock there for sure.
Right. No, exactly. It was kind of the embodiment of that reaction.
Well, they got saved from themselves a little bit, I think, because Zach Collins was already drafted. Mm-hmm. I think that was somebody they liked, which made zero sense to me. As it admittedly, I joked last night about my NBA draft bona fides, which I don't really have. I'm not an
Your
NBA
what?
Draft expert. I don't really have credentials when it comes to that. But at the same time, like, I was sort of like, really, you're going to draft a 7-footer that can shoot again? Like, don't you have 2 of those literally on your roster right now? Like, why do you need to draft another one of those? I did not understand. But,
well, it seems like they
and
didn't.
I know people like Zach Collins a lot. I get it. But I was like, I'm not really seeing that one. So I was happy for them that they drafted an actual, like, guard that can make shots, because they don't really have a lot of those.
Well,
that's the only thing I know about the Hornets.
Another friend of mine works at the Hornets.
Yeah.
Natalie Brenneman. She used to work at NC State
as
a student. And on her Snapchat last night, it was a quote from another person in the office. And it said, if Luke Kennard gets picked before Malik Monk and comes to this team, I'm quitting this job right now. And so I think there was just a lot of concern from Hornets fans that
they would do the wrong thing.
A lot of different wrong options.
I mean,
they still got it right.
I would have liked Luke Kennard for that.
I would have liked it too.
He can shoot.
Yes.
That's important.
It's really the most important.
As much as I love Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, that dude's jump shot is still broken. It's broke. Like, have you ever seen it? I would not Google it right now. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist jump shot. Like, I need to hear your reaction live on this. I'm serious.
Oh, gosh. Or you just told me not to Google it right now.
Well, I kind of want to hear your actual, like, live reaction to this. Like, I think people would be very interested.
I'm on my way to becoming a Hornets fan.
What
Hornets
you got to go fan. Images. Go images, because you'll get a big one. And it is terrifying if you can see it. Did you do Michael Kidd-Gilchrist?
Oh, God.
Yeah, see? There it is. There it is. I told you.
It's worse than Lonzo Ball's.
It looks like his arm is literally broken. Does it not? Like, it looks like he is breaking his elbow, like pulling it out of his
socket. What?
It is alarmingly terrible. So you tell me, like, do the Hornets need shooting? Yeah, maybe. Or at least a guy that doesn't do that. Like, can we never see that again, for the love of all that's holy? I know they've been working on him it, but like,
I think my thing
haunts my dreams
on the broken shot. So UCLA was in Memphis in the same region as Carolina.
Yeah, the UCLA Kentucky
game. And when I saw that shot, I was like, does he really shoot like that?
Lonzo?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and like, I know that it's a thing. and I was tweeting about it, and the thing was, my level of shock, even knowing that his shot looks like what it does on a telecast or that it's a part of a conversation about him, my shock seeing it in person was still as if I'd never even heard of how bad it was, because it's just it's really amazing. Simple. I think too, Gilchrist is one thing, but to have someone go into the draft and grow up playing basketball like 2010 to now, I played 1 year of terrible basketball. I was a dancer and a cheerleader. And
oh, I did the cheerleader basketball combo once too, and then I just chose basketball.
Well, yeah. I had danced
competitively with Crokies on, so.
Like for like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah,
had switched to cheerleading, and then my dad's fiance was a youth league basketball coach, so they put me on the team because they needed bodies or something. I don't remember how I got roped into it, but I was awful. But even in being really bad, the number one thing that we were taught was you have to have correct shooting form. Like, it was harped. Me, all the boys, 7 boys in the neighborhood, like, sports were happening all of the time. And when it came to basketball, every parent in the neighborhood was so dead set on making sure that you shoot in a way that if you become a ball player isn't harmful, or, you know, that it's the best shot you can have.
I was big on that too.
How do you in 2017, has no one asked his dad about the shot? I mean, I'm sure they have, but like, why can we not pay more attention to that? It's just unusual. Obviously, he's a great ball player, but why are we letting people shoot like this? It bothers me.
I don't know.
That's my basketball analysis, and I promise to never do
that's
it.
That's fine.
Never do it again, guys.
Really, the story of the draft sort of ended up being about Twitter, kind of. At least that was sort of one of the stories, which I think can kind of take us right into our Twitter questions.
Well, obviously.
because one of the most recent questions we got from Will Thompson on Twitter, and we'll contextualize this, how in God's name did nobody see that Dennis Smith tweet that's making the rounds tonight? Okay, so Dennis Smith Jr., obviously NC State point guard, drafted 9th overall, going to the Dallas Mavericks, and not long after he's drafted, and for some reason, this is always when it comes out, right?
Yes.
Why people wait for this, I have no idea.
Well,
but a tweet comes out that is, I mean, I don't know that we need to read the tweet. We can. I mean, it's not like...
Everybody has God-given talents. Mine just so happens to be, this would be a great place to insert the word ball. Basketball, shooting, anything about your sport, Dennis. Instead, he goes with slanging this wood in my pants. And wood is the word he used in his defense. So little discretion there, which is fine to begin with. Not a great tweet, but guys, Dennis was probably 13 or 14 years old when he sent that tweet.
Right.
Did you have Twitter when you were 13 or 14? Probably not. I didn't. I got forced into it when I was 19 for reporting purposes.
Right.
I cannot imagine what it would have been like to be going through middle school and have Twitter there. Like, the amount of angst that would have been in my tweets.
Well, that's
y'all would have gotten me fired a long time ago.
I was
going
to say, like, I already had a job by the time I got Twitter. So I was already watching some of what I tweeted. But my God, I cannot even begin to imagine the things I would have put on Twitter at that age. Like, I really cannot. Because I know Mitchell Trubisky from Carolina had some similar tweets pulled up when he got drafted. They're not the only ones, but these are the local ones of interest.
His tweet was more about women's anatomy than his own.
Yes, it was. You're correct about that. But it was still very juvenile. And, like, because he was a juvenile.
It's crazy how that works.
And, you know, I get semi-annoyed at this little ritual because Twitter is such a place where, like, the cool people hang out, the anti-authority people, right? The ones that, you know, and then all of a sudden...
Is that what that's for?
Well, I mean, I think that has a general vibe of, like, what's cool on Twitter is, like, anti-authority, questioning stuff all the time, like, whatever. And then all of a sudden they want to, like... And, like, doing what's best for the player, I feel like, a lot. Like, what's best for the kid, the student-athlete, it's anti-NCAA.
It's a common Twitter thread.
All of this
okay,
stuff,
that's true.
Right? It's like, you know, it's doing what's best. Like, we all like to view athletes as individuals.
We the people.
We the people of Twitter. This is the Twitter constitution, right? It's happening right now. But, and then all of a sudden on draft night, it's like, oh, LOL at these old tweets. Let me continue to share them. I'm going to go back through this dude's Twitter and find them. It just annoys
okay.
me. I'm like, what a
here's
narc.
Here's my defense of that. You're seeing it as people sharing it in critique of it, and surely
no,
there's some
I'm
of
not
that.
Even.
I think it's funny. Like, one of my favorite people that I follow on Twitter is a girl who I only met out in college, and she is arguably still 4 years later one of the biggest party girls I know. And she just finished grad school, like has this miraculous way of really going hard and still getting her stuff done.
Uh-huh.
And her Twitter timeline is just this place of like off-color humor and some of the funniest jokes I've ever seen. And it's funny, and Twitter's an okay place for that. And for people to share things like that, it's along the same line as someone sharing Dennis's tweet or Mitch's tweet. I think some of the harping on these tweets comes from it just being like, this is really funny. It would have been funny if we found it 17 days ago. Would have been funny if we found it several months ago.
And it's funny because I guess apparently like this was like common knowledge, I guess, that this tweet existed, but I never had heard of it.
Was it?
That was sort of Will's point of like, how did no one find this before now?
So it wasn't common knowledge. It was like, why didn't it become
why
more
would it become a thing?
I don't know. I think it's funny. I think it's, you know, I wish I had that much confidence when I was 13, honestly. it's a good question, though. I don't know how no one found it. Someone was asking Jason Tatum, I think from SI, 2 days ago, did you have a tweet that you had to delete before the draft? Because that's a thing. And Jason said, no, my mom was one of my first Twitter followers. So I always was aware that, you know, she didn't follow a ton of people and my tweets would end up in her timeline. So, like,
I don't know.
Wouldn't tweet that in front of mom, probably.
I don't know why it annoys me so much. It just kind of does.
Either.
It's very much like almost like a gotcha thing. And I'm just like, come on. I don't know.
I think it depends. There are definitely people who like think it's
or
such
it's
a
like,
heinous
how
crime.
How did you not delete this? It's like, because he probably forgot he even tweeted it. Like, what?
Right. It's not in the forefront of his mind.
Why did his agent tweet this? Because they're trying to like do things that actually matter to his future.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. I think, and that's somebody, oh man, I can't think of who it was, but one of the guys who was local and was set to be drafted this week, I was having a conversation with another friend earlier last week and was like, I wonder if that about his character, that ambiguous thing, will hurt him. And it was something pretty harmless. It was like,
right.
It was a social related, I really don't remember what it was, but it was like, no, his tweeting out a boneheaded thing here or there,
right,
the fact that he's 18, 19, 20, 21 and likes girls or likes to have a good time with his friends or maybe occasionally shares too much on Instagram. I just remember what it was. It was somebody putting a video of himself on Instagram. He likes to rap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he's not a great rapper, objectively or subjectively, but I think both. And somebody was like, is that really what you want agents to see? Is that what you want the NBA to see? And it's like, that's not an issue. Like on the list of things they're concerned about,
right.
Boneheaded tweets from 13, 14 years old.
Yep.
The fact that you do harmless, normal things for someone your age,
yeah, exactly.
That you maybe should share slightly less on social media. Pretty common.
That
doesn't separate you from any of the people around you. So an agent's job is to find the things that will separate a player,
yeah.
Most notably on the court.
Exactly. I'm with you on that. We also got a question, which is kind of related to this one in a way, I guess, although there's a different, you can just delete that tweet as opposed to doing this. This is from Christopher Newberry on Twitter. Why isn't there an edit button? Hashtag Twitter questions. I think that was also Christopher taking me somewhat literally when I requested Twitter questions,
right.
And asking a question about Twitter, which is fine because I actually think like I've seen a lot of advocating for an edit button on Twitter and I don't know that it's as simple of a thing as you know what I mean? I don't know that it's as simple an answer as all that. Like you can edit posts on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a typo, I guess, or maybe, I mean, I'm assuming though that you can edit something that you said that you know, you want to take back in some way and maybe mm-hmm. reshape your thought the way you want to, which in theory sounds great, but I don't know that I want that to be a thing. Like, what if you can go back in time and like see a tweet that substantially is different from the tweet that was originally there? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like, I almost feel like it's a false record in a way.
I think that's the argument. Record is actually the word that was used the first time that I saw an argument that made me change my stance on it, because oftentimes when I'm tweeting, it's at a live event, whether it's a football game, bowl game, Carolina State, Carolina Duke, like whatever. It's always be fast and be accurate, and I'll read through it, but I'll miss the autocorrect, or
right,
you know, you hit the two and the three at the same time, and then you got a three-digit score instead of two. And so for that, it would be helpful, and that's the main reason I need it. But like, let's say Donald Trump, since we have a president who likes social media, wants to go back and change something he said. And so when he says, I didn't say that, and people so often like to say, yes, you did, here's the tweet in which it says exactly what you're denying.
Yeah. To be fair,
you can change it. And anybody can do that now.
You could screenshot, I guess, to avoid, like, if it's someone that high profile. But if you're not that high profile and, like, you're just tweeting stuff, couldn't you just go back and be like, you know, this draft pick that you said you hated, you could just go back and change the tweet and have it say something else.
Well, Lord, we're doing that anyway. Who's the ESPN guy that changed his stance from Cam Newton, no one thinks he's a leader, to Cam Newton is the best young leader in the NFL in a matter of about 10 minutes 2 days ago?
Very serious journalist, Booger McFarland.
That's the answer to the question. We're already doing that on radio and across, and then it's ending up on social media. But I think it would just be, there would be no accountability whatsoever. And so the people who are now hanging their hats on my takes right would have even less credibility.
I'm with you on that.
And although it may not matter, it would just be a lot more annoying in that stance.
So we also got a Twitter question that definitely elicited some response, I think, even from people that weren't following this person. Which I thought was very interesting. This is from Huzz Wood, and I think, didn't he tell us it was like one of his first tweets, or is that somebody else?
That's what it read as, and then I went and looked at his profile, and
he had
wasn't
a bunch of tweets.
So I don't think
a liar. All right,
I think maybe he was saying that was my first tweet at you guys.
Oh,
he doesn't. Okay. He doesn't tweet a lot.
Okay,
I will say that he, like, I looked at his tweets, and the most recent was maybe like from 2014 or stuff. So like maybe it was his first tweet in a while, or his first Twitter question for our podcast. Anyway, Huzz, thanks for your contribution. We didn't understand what you meant.
It says, moving to the Triangle this summer, can I support both UNC and state basketball? Is that allowed? No.
I said, in a single word, I think the answer is no.
And you saw some state fans chime
in. We'll give you an in-depth answer on the podcast. And then I got a hell no exclamation mark.
Yep.
Let me save you some time. Yep. You are either with us or
and
against
that's
from
us. An NC state fan.
From Steve Young at I Hate Light Blue.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
which
he's
is not, the I most mean, important Twitter
his
handle.
His line is drawn in the sand. Like, he is making no mistake about where
he's
he
got
stands
the Surrender
here.
Cobra as it at in a state t-shirt as his Twitter profile picture. Yeah. And a lot of people I know follow him, so...
Yeah.
What's up, Steve?
I've interacted with him for years. Good dude.
He doesn't follow me, so I haven't, and that explains why. But we appreciate you answering that way.
I mean, I think that's
probably pretty much
the
addresses
correct
it.
The thing is, like... I don't know. I think that a lot of us around here, especially when it comes to like the postseason and the ultimate success of both teams, a lot of us media folk around here would legit tell you that we sort of root for all three in that way. Like
I'll straight up tell you.
Yeah, like we want all three to be good. Our lives are easier when they're good. It's not
our readership is higher, and that affects whether or not I get a raise at the end of the year.
We don't want anybody to be bad. We don't like that. We want them to be good. Like, we don't like when people are bad. It's not fun to cover a bad team. It's not. Believe me, I've had to do it plenty. It's not fun to cover a bad team. We'd rather cover a good team, and we want them all to be good. So in a way, like, we sort of root for all three, but
it's different. We're not fans. We're pulling for business. Like, and I'm laughing while I say that, but I truly mean that.
I don't think that I know a lot of people around here that, gosh, I don't know if I know anybody that would say, like, oh. I mean, I guess maybe some Carolina fans, if state's in the NCAA tournament, wouldn't hate it.
Right.
They'd probably root for them before Duke. In basketball.
Okay, so here's where I'm sitting from a very unusual standpoint on this, and I still tell you, Huzz, no, you can't. You cannot. Huzz Wood moving here this summer, you cannot show up and pull for state and Carolina.
No.
Unless... you know, I don't know where you're from. It's not on your Twitter. I'm trying to find out so I can give you a very personal answer to this question. But I'm from Asheville, North Carolina. My mom and her sister went to UNC. Growing up, my dad was a Carolina fan. But when we got to the ACC basketball tournament, we would, as both sides of my family, pull for all of the North Carolina teams. North Carolina first, Duke second for my mom, state second for my dad, everyone wanted to see Wake do well because there's no animosity against Wake Forest. My dad hates Duke. My mom always
Wake
said,
does not return that sentiment. Just
well, yeah, and I still can't figure that out. Like
I was going to say, growing up in Greensboro, I've been around plenty of Wake people, and they do not return that sentiment.
Yeah, they got chips on their shoulders like Virginia does, and I can't figure that out. It's
different for them. Like theirs is more from a place of anger as opposed from a place of let's look at all the slights against us. That's more UVA fan to
me. No, I think that's Wake's issue, too, based on recent interactions I've had with Wake fans, and they're like, why are we left out? It used to be the Big Four, now it's the Big Three.
Right. Well, that's where the anger is rooted, though.
Yeah.
Theirs is, I think, more turned into an anger where Virginia fans just like, I don't know.
Virginia's is we should be part of a Big Three that's Duke, North Carolina, and Virginia basketball. It's quite similar.
Really? Well.
At least that's what I mean, picked up from all of the arguments. And to be fair, they've got
like in the league
in terms of league records recently. And I think there's a slight argument there.
I mean, they've done really well.
History, guys. Yeah. History.
I would still probably put Louisville ahead of them at this point.
So would I. And so do I. And let's talk about Hall of Fame coaches
but
if you want to know.
It's not like they're not right there. Louisville's got to go ahead of them.
You got to be there and hang out for a little while.
You got to at least get to a Final Four. And I'm not trying to knock it.
Wow.
But it was right on the tee for you. It was right there.
Yeah, that was some crap.
Still can't believe that.
That was really
bad. But anyway,
really
yeah.
Bad.
No, I mean, I think here's the point.
Some of us root for North Carolina teams because we're from North Carolina. As Lauren said, once we enter the postseason,
especially
the longer everyone
stick around, please.
We plays like better. Everyone, go win your bowl game. Why? Because you're playing teams that we don't care about.
Right.
And I'll say that's true too for ECU. Would love to see ECU do better in football. Would love to see their basketball program go somewhere in the long run.
Yeah.
But you can't just move here and claim fandom of two of the local teams.
Okay.
I don't think you can. Unless,
well, not claim fandom, but like if you I mean, look, in your heart, if you want to root for them both, okay, but eventually you're going to have to choose. Like, if you want to try to test it out that way and say, like, hey, I'm going to root for both of these teams to win, whatever, but you're going to have to choose. Like, you're going to have to make a choice, and it's going to have to happen fast because you can't do both. Like, you can't get state season tickets and show up in blue for the Carolina games. Like, that's not going to fly with the state people. They're not going to be okay with that.
Yeah, I think state people are going to have a bigger issue with this than Carolina fans will, and for a multitude of reasons, Huzz. You'll figure it out when you're here, I promise you.
You will.
It'll become apparent. You'll have a really hard time making friends if you do this.
Yeah, you think that it'll be inclusive, but it won't.
It won't be.
It will have the opposite effect. You will not cast a wider net.
You actually might get less flack from Duke fans if you said, I'm just pulling for both Duke and Carolina in basketball because they're both good, than you would from NC State fans by saying, I moved here and I'm trying to pick a team and Carolina and State are the two I'm picking too.
I would agree with that.
I just think you would.
You would.
And that's because there's more mutual respect in the Duke-Carolina rivalry than there is in the state-Carolina rivalry.
Although I also think it's partially because, and I'm not claiming to understand completely the psyche of Duke fan, but I think Duke fan has just gotten to this point where there's sort of this insular bubble of like there's a big mix. There's more people in that fan base that came to it as outsiders.
Yes.
So there's not that sense of elitism of like, well, I went to Duke, you know. Well, not a lot of people go to Duke, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, I don't...
As opposed to, like, Carolina, where it's like, well, did you even go to Carolina? You know, there's plenty of Carolina fans that didn't go to Carolina either, but there's almost this more judgmental sense from outsiders of like, well, if you didn't go to Carolina, why are you a Carolina fan? People who grow up around here pick a team a lot. Sometimes they pick Duke.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't end up going to Duke, and that's, you know, that's more of a common thing around here to pick a team and not go to it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's fair to say. I mean, I have plenty of family that picked a team and they didn't even go to college. So,
I mean, my dad didn't.
Right.
He has some college classes under his belt, but he didn't go to Carolina. He's always been a Carolina fan. I mean, he grew up one.
But I don't think Duke fans get bothered by that as much as like maybe Carolina fans would. I don't think they mind being called like, oh, you didn't even go to school. Yeah, no, we didn't go to school here. Like, we don't mind latching onto this team. We've liked them forever. Like, they don't feel that kind of, I don't know. It doesn't seem to bother them as much.
I guess what I want to, my follow up for you, Lauren, is are you saying that non-Duke graduates don't get as bothered when people question their fandom as non-Carolina graduates do when you question their fandom? Or are you saying that graduates don't mind? Because I think that people who attended Duke and Carolina
equally care.
I think
actual graduates don't mind if like people that didn't go there end up rooting for their team.
I think at Duke
they mind less, yes, than Carolina graduates.
Huh.
Because, I mean, look, it's a small school. Like, if you want to have a huge national fan base, you are inevitably going to have people who did not go there to be a fan of your team. And that's what they want. That's what everybody wants.
I got to wonder, too, though, is that because a lot of the Duke graduates aren't from here? And more of Carolina's are because by contract with the North Carolina legislation, Carolina has to accept a certain percentage of in-state students, and Duke doesn't have that.
Right.
I got to wonder if that's part of why your perception is that way, because I don't know that I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's just been my general impression. But, I mean, you know, I could be wrong. I know that there are also Carolina grads.
You can absolutely be right.
There are also a lot of Carolina grads, I think, that feel more like, well, they almost are more elitist about their own fandom. It's like, well.
Well, that's certainly true. And I think that that's warranted for any school's graduate, whether it's IU or Michigan. Like, there are Michigan fans and then there are Michigan men. And Michigan men are people who went there.
Right.
Who are male,
that's
so
true.
To speak.
Yeah.
And there's an elitism there, and I think that's earned.
Yeah.
And I would say that for any school, UCLA, give me USC.
It's definitely earned,
Texas,
but it's annoying in a sense.
You're a next tier fan. You actually went there. You experienced those things as a student.
It is annoying in a sense to me, though, because it's like you don't have a huge national program without those other people.
Like, no, I'm not saying you got to get rid of them.
No,
I
know you're not. I'm
you
just saying the general elitist attitude that comes from some fans is like, well, do you want to just have this team all to yourself then? Because that's going to affect merch sales and all kinds of stuff.
No, like, I don't think that any graduate of any school should block out fans of their team who didn't go there. But I do think that you paid to go to that school so that you could say you truly went there.
Right.
No, you get some. You have the right to then brag about that a little harder than someone who didn't go there. Clemson, we got a lot of in Asheville, North Carolina, where I'm from. There are a lot of random Clemson fans, and almost like some of them went there. And I think it's because the Asheville, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson television and media market ropes in a ton of Clemson people. Mm-hmm. But there is a crazy amount of Clemson fandom, and it's people who have just picked a team, and it's like you got to welcome those people. But you also, I do think there's a difference in a fan who went to a school and a fan who didn't.
Yeah.
I think so. And I think that part of that comes from the money. Part of it comes from the experience. But don't be mean to fans who didn't go to your school, who still want to root for your team.
Yeah.
Befriend them and bring them in. And don't be an a-hole about the fact that they didn't go there.
Yeah,
but you can be
for everyone. You
can be extra proud that you graduated from a university. By all means, do it from all universities.
So we've gotten a few questions about this, and this isn't the first time. From RW Wilmington, we get, if in the future beer is sold at Carter Finley, should craft beer only be sold? And if so, which craft beers?
No.
We also got from Corey, a colleague, Corey Smith, if Carter Finley or Keenan sold beer, which brewery would be your first choice as a vendor? I would certainly, if they want to make money, like, let's be real here. As much as we all like I like craft beer. It's not for everybody, but I like it. And I know a lot of people that like it. And I know Twitter is definitely a place where people who like craft beer tend to go and congregate. So, I get it that we all sort of get in our bubble and think, like, craft beer is the stuff. But there are a lot of people, especially football fans, that would perhaps prefer a cheaper beer.
Here's my argument.
You know what I mean?
Not only is cheaper going to sell you more beers in the stands, which is the whole argument behind sell alcohol at college football games, do you want to go stand on September 1st at a noon game? So 12 to 3:30, 4 p.m.
Oh, with that heavy
dead
IPA.
Sun, Raleigh hydration, Durham heat. Chapel Hill's sun blazing down.
The sun reflecting
off of the empty seats that are aluminum. Do you want IPA in your belly, or do you want a very light Coors Light, Bud Light, Miller Light?
You speak truth, Meryl.
Therein lies your answer to what beer you should sell at an ACC football stadium.
Look, I get
if it's October and Duke and North Carolina are playing a Thursday night game, I would stand outside in the 40-degree, 35-degree weather and drink an IPA. Why? Because it's going to affect my body faster, and usually when that happens, my body gets warmer. So, like, give me an IPA for the cold games, and I'm good with that, but I don't think it makes sense to only sell craft beer in a football stadium when most of these games are getting played before the sun even gets close to setting, especially in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I get why people, like I said, I get why people have this idea and this thought, but, like, you're right. Like, you sort of nailed it there about why, first of all, more beers get sold, because there are going to be a lot of people, by the way, that pass by the craft beer stand, and they're like, nah.
$12 pass.
Well, also, like, they don't, people, like, legit don't like some of those beers. That's a thing. You know what I mean? Like, they'd be like,
everyone's freaking
what
out.
What is this? I've never heard of this. That. Like, I don't want this. That's a thing that people would say. So.
I drank a Coors Light and a Michelob Ultra last night at the Bulls game.
That's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
That's what goes with sporting events.
Right. So I think that, you know, I think if beer is allowed in, you might see some crap. Like, I would imagine, I don't know, because I haven't been down to the, like, bar at Wake where they sell alcohol.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they sold Foothills just because it's right there.
True.
Like, literally right there, you know?
I mean, Red Oak might be there.
Red Oak could be there. Sure, it's not far. So, close-ish. You know, if you want to incorporate a few local breweries, I think that'd be great. Like, I think that'd be very cool, but you better have the cheap options. Like, you better.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, know your fan base.
Oh, totally.
What craft beer are they going to drink in Carter Finley? A good portion of that fan base is going to tell you to take your craft beer to Chapel Hill.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, like, honestly.
I'm just saying, like.
Not trying to, like, not overly all of them, stereotype and I know we fan bases.
No,
but
I'm. And Chapel Hill's going to ask, when are we getting wine? Or let me write the joke for you. Like,
I mean, I'm asking that already.
I'm not big on wine. I don't want it. I definitely don't want it during a football game. It doesn't make sense.
Well, fine.
But.
They do sell it in like
know
a box
your audience,
now.
Okay?
They sell it in cans now, so it's tailgate
wine?
Friendly. Yeah, and
hard,
they actually sell this
pass.
Like cardboard. They sell this like cardboard thing now, which is basically the entire bottle of wine. So you can, and it even is written on it that you can take it to tailgates. And I was like,
okay, well,
very excited. I don't tailgate though, so I was like, oh, maybe this is ruined. But at least it's like a portable like bottle of wine. I could just take it
on a picnic.
See?
Take to the beach. Beach
either,
friendly.
Yeah, the beach thing was a big thing. I actually got, last time I was at the beach, I bought those like little bottles, those mini bottles, you know, of wine so you can take them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was excited.
They were still in your fridge yesterday.
Oh, those are different.
Okay.
I bought
kidding.
Separate ones. Oh, I do drink those though. You know when I drink those? When I'm literally too lazy to clean a wine glass. I'm not kidding.
That would be called efficiency.
I mean, thank you. I'm with you on that. So yeah, that's the answer. The classic
no,
beers.
We do have to pick though, if they're going to sell craft beers, because we have said
if they're going to sell. Oh, we have to pick the craft beer brewery.
Like what craft beer for what stadium fits in the ACC? I think you gave us Wake Forest, even though they do
Fort
already
Hills.
Sell.
Sure.
Oh gosh, this is going to be the glaring.
Chapel Hill,
light that
you
shines
probably
on
have
my
to,
lack of
for
knowledge.
Chapel Hill, I might go with Hall River, but that's me. I love Hall River and think it's great. I think that there are people
never
that would
it.
Go with like a Steel String, which is in Carrboro, or something like that. But Hall River is probably not the type of place that could supply that much, but I would go with Hall River.
Does Carolina the Carolina Brewery beers?
Or
do they
you could
count?
Go with Carolina
that's
Brewery.
Already like what they sell yeah. on Franklin Street.
Sure.
Wow, we're way overthinking this. Top of the
Topo.
Hill.
Topo's
Brewery is what you're going to sell at Keenan Stadium.
Give me all that blueberry beer. I love that.
Yeah. Wow. We went. Okay. Well, blueberry's the spring though. That's a spring brew.
So for Raleigh, it's a little.
It'd be Old Well White. It'd be
oh, that's
the
true.
Charlie
that
Choo Choo Chocolate
yeah.
Stout for the winter.
Okay, that's true.
That's what you're serving in
for
in
Raleigh
Keenan.
Is a little trickier, I think, because there's. That,
so
I mean,
many.
There's a lot. There's really a lot. And I don't know that one, maybe like Trophy couldn't handle it, I don't think. Maybe they could. But Trophy's really good and it's
I'd
in Raleigh.
I'd be pulling for Trophy.
I would be too. I love Trophy. I think it's great. Raleigh Brewing is solid, but that's a lot of heavy beers too.
Is it what Clouds is one?
Clouds that's
is
just
that Raleigh based
I think
or
that's
no?
that is, but I don't know. I guess they do their own beers, don't they? I don't know.
I've
this
never,
is where we need to consult
been.
Beer people.
I but. Always just go to Trophy if I'm going to get a
Trophy's fantastic.
Beer in Raleigh.
I mean, I would be okay with Trophy. That'd be fine with me.
All right, there's our answer, because we agree on it.
And there you go.
Nothing else is sticking out as a better option.
So we're good with that.
I liked the question, we have our own ice cream. Why don't we have our own brewery on campus at State yet?
Exactly.
I thought that was a good question. State, where are you guys at on that education? Like, how close is that program to existing there? I got to think App State has, like, a beer making class by now.
Probably. Well, is it still Dry County up there in Boone?
Watauga hasn't been at Dry County for a while.
Oh, that's what people were saying back when my friends were in school, but I don't know. Maybe not.
It was not a Dry County when I was there.
Okay.
If it was, oops.
Yeah, no, believe me, I was like, why would you do that on a college campus? But whatever.
I don't think so, or else they were just ignoring that law.
I could be wrong on that. Either way.
No, it was at one point a Dry County. I just don't think it still is.
Well, that's good. Yeah, they do have Appalachian Mountain
Brewery.
Yep. That was the last time I drank beer. Was when I went on the trip to Asheville. I didn't go to Appalachian Mountain Brewery, but I went to a bunch of breweries in Asheville that mostly that I hadn't gone to before because I wanted to try their beers and stuff. And that was my like goodbye to beer for a couple months.
I forgot you were doing that.
So that's been, that is getting increasingly difficult.
I tried to do sober increasingly June and difficult. It didn't work out.
Oh, I could never do a sober thing.
No. I could. I really could if I could, if I said I was going to do it and then I was just like, no. I used to almost never drink outside of like social settings and I still don't drink that much, but.
There's just nothing wrong with having a few. Like when we had that golf tournament the other day.
Yeah.
For the Sports Radio Open, they had beer at like one of the holes and it was like, do not make try this content. New beer that Lauren's never tried and sounds amazing. And I'm like, ugh. But you know, I've come this far. It's like, why stop now? So that's the way I see it.
Wait, how long do you have to do this?
I mean, I don't have to at all, but.
How long did you say you were going to do this?
About 2 months.
Which will happen first? You drink beer or UNC gets sanctions?
Oh, me drink beer. Yeah, my brother gets
That's
married at the end of July.
That's favorite game to play.
My brother gets married at the end of July, so
too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's fine. No, okay.
But speaking of that, is Louisville relevant to UNC? We got that question on Twitter.
Okay. Yes and no. No in the sense that, the cases are different, obviously, and B, the NCAA is incredibly arbitrary at times. So in both of those senses, like, no, it's not necessarily relevant. But I do think maybe the way that Rick Pitino was dealt with could potentially be relevant because Jim Boeheim was dealt with somewhat similarly. I do think there's one key difference in both of those cases and UNC's case, and that is that the person that committed the infractions that both head coaches were deemed responsible for was on their staff, right? Like, I think Syracuse had an assistant coach like logging in and doing work mm-hmm. for players for one thing. Pitino obviously had Andre McGee doing whatever behind his back. Is it plausible that like neither of them knew about it? Of course it is. Of course it's plausible. But the NCAA ultimately decided this is a guy on your staff and you need to be responsible for them. That seems to be the precedent they're sort of setting with the coaches.
Right. Is that coaches do need to have oversight over their programs. I think that certainly is relevant.
So it could be relevant in this case because I think like it's a little different though because I think we can all agree that Roy, he even based on what he has said, knew something was going on. He knew something was up. He just didn't know what. And I think he acted in a way that if what he says is true is very understandable in terms of like, okay, something weird's going on here. I'm getting the dudes out and I'm not asking any questions because I'm not trying to deal with whatever this is. I'm just getting the guys out and fixing it.
Clean it up. Don't ask what it was.
Yes. And so I think that in itself is understandable because, like, you know, do you really want to deal with the fallout from that? Probably not. So I think, like, and with what Pitino said, he wrote that letter the other day about, like, how things went down with him. It was understandable. I think you could agree that it's all understandable. It's plausible that none of them knew beyond what they've said they know. But I think the NCAA has just taken this approach of, like, well, we don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the penalty on Pitino is relevant. But in terms of the way they came to that penalty,
right.
Carolina's argument, an ongoing battle with the NCAA, is over it breaking its own laws, so to speak, or its own rules, it overstepping its jurisdiction. North Carolina's argument is NCAA, you do not have the right to monitor our academics. You therefore don't have the right to penalize us on something that happened academically. It's not within your bylaws. It's not within anything that you monitor.
Although, to be fair, the NCAA's response to that has seemingly been, oh yeah, we don't care.
Right, exactly. So I think in the court of law, North Carolina's argument is stronger. In the court of the NCAA doesn't make any sense. It doesn't follow any of its own precedent.
Right.
And it does act arbitrarily.
Yeah. It's not like Carolina's
can certainly
gonna
do whatever it wants.
Right. It's not like Carolina's going to win that case, though, just because.
No, because the NCAA, it's like. It's like when your parent.
Okay,
it's like when you get in trouble and then your parent sets new rules.
Right.
Because they don't like what you did.
Exactly.
And their old rules didn't cover that.
And you say, but hey, that's not
the
fair.
Problem you did.
Yeah,
and they
care.
Say, we don't care. We're in charge.
Because we say so.
That's kind of. Yeah, that's what the NCAA is doing.
Yeah.
And if you guys remember this, your parents always win. Yeah. Almost always.
And this won't be any different here necessarily.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
I think the Pitino thing could be relevant. I also think it could be relevant that they are taking away the championship because they have never done that before. It's literally the first time they've ever done it.
Right.
So if any, you know, obviously the 05 championship could potentially be in jeopardy if you judge based off of this.
Right. And I think that that's always been, in terms of the timeline, the one that people expected.
Yep.
or looked for.
It's going to be the only one, but still.
Surely.
That's, you know, a lot of people said maybe they won't take away a title, like, because there would be some lack of willingness to do so. But I think this pretty much shows that there is plenty of willingness to do so, apparently.
Yes, I do think so.
I do think it's hilarious, and I have been saying this the whole time. Like, if that's all they end up doing to Carolina is just taking away a title and, like, let's say they give Roy 3 games, right?
All okay. this for that?
Right, like, will people be happy about that? Like, I think they will at first, and then they'll be like, wait, where's the punishment? Because I think people were like that with Louisville at first. Like, they
well,
were like,
they already
wow,
did the,
this is
they already
severe.
Did the scholarships with football. They already did right. a little bit there. And that, I think, was more of a punishment than taking wins that people still got to live out.
No, I'm with you, but a lot of people, you know, that are mad about this really want the wins gone. And I'm just like, whatever. So, I just think it's funny, because I'm like, don't you want it to hurt them in a real way? But it is a weird balance, because I think even the NCAA will not want to hurt people that had nothing to do with it, and because it's been so long.
That's not true. They already did that to the football program. They have already hurt.
Well, but like that was much more immediate.
Active.
You
yeah,
know?
But
that
that's...
was much more immediate. Like, this has been literally almost 10 years. So
yeah.
I think there is going to be some lack of
no,
willingness
I think
to
the
like...
president of the NCAA says they will hurt people who had nothing to do with it, and they don't really care. I mean, the president of the NCAA is, in fact, that there is not one. That
yeah.
we can find
no,
things
I'm,
and point
I'm
to
with
them.
You. I will say, though, that one thing that has been consistent with them is that if you make them mad, that's not good.
Didn't Miami make them mad?
Well, yeah, but they...
That's my counter-argument.
The they had a real... they had... and Miami got punished. I mean...
Yeah, but...
They had the issue with the investigator that was on staff, and so that's the only reason they couldn't come down harder on Miami. But USC made them mad.
That's true.
And they went real hard on USC... kind of out of spite, if we're being honest.
That's yeah. Oh no, that absolutely happens.
So, because they don't have much power as it is, and so they want to wield it however they can,
or make up new rules when they can.
It does seem like parenting, doesn't it? Am I going to be doing that soon? Do you think?
Stay tuned to find out.
I know.
I have no idea. Probably.
Marilyn watched my 11-month-old the other day when I had to come in to do some radio.
So,
and apparently. I found out after the
fact. I just told Lauren, that's the first time anyone's ever left me alone with their kid, ever. That having been said...
You've been around plenty of kids.
I've been around a lot of kids. I also took, like, 2 CPR courses,
oh,
a babysitting
great.
Class. Like, I've been through a lot of training, and I've always been very good with children. I've been around kids a lot. I've been responsible for kids mm-hmm. at events where other adults were around.
Sure.
Just, like... my whole life. I've told people this before. I hope I haven't already said this on the podcast. If so, I'm repeating this. When I was in kindergarten, my brother is 21 months, 22 months younger than me. I got in trouble for like literally sneaking away from my kindergarten class to go help, quote unquote, help the teachers take care of the babies in the 3-year-old preschool class. Like, I have always loved children. Very strong maternal instinct. That's just how I was born. So I told Lauren after the fact that like that was my first like formal watching of child alone.
Beggars can't be choosers.
No,
that.
I mean,
so like
just,
I was very much in a pinch and you know my kid was sick and I couldn't take him to my childcare, so I
change diapers
it.
I know how
yeah,
to feed a kid. I understand the timeline
that's
of like
fine.
How long you leave them down even if they're crying before
no,
you get
that.
Them back up or you have to leave them there to sleep. Like
I was gonna say, like, you really nailed it. Like I didn't give you much instruction. I was just, you know, I'm not big on that anyways. I know some people that have taken care of my kids but of my kid before have like wanted really detailed instructions, and I was actually really like I was grateful that like Marilyn just wanted like a little bit. You're just,
I mean,
like, yeah, it's fine.
There are surely parents who I would take
like
more instruction from
out,
and
you know?
Who like would need or who generally structure things more than that. But I guess you're
yeah.
like all the parents I know,
yeah.
I guess. Like truly. Aww. All the ones that were in the neighborhood that I grew up in, almost every parent who had a kid that was in the Bible Fellowship or the churches mm-hmm. that I attended over the course of my life, generally pretty non-anal about the way that they parent their children and
yeah,
the rules that they set around things. So to all of the parents that are listening out there, If that's not your style.
Although I still feel bad that apparently he kept, like, he would not. I thought he was, I actually waited to put him down for a second nap because I was like, I want him to at least see you and so that he doesn't wake up and all of a sudden, not, he doesn't mind strangers, but all of a sudden there's a stranger, like, reaching for him, like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, that might be a little scarring.
Right. But, so I wanted to wait to put him down and he was definitely, like, on the verge of needing a nap. But,
So he napped very briefly.
Right.
And then had to be woken up.
Yeah, because my house cleaners showed up. So he had to be woken up. And so I'm like, well, just put him down right after and he should go to sleep. Well,
Alex was not going to sleep yesterday.
No, he was not.
So we just hung out. Just chilled. That toy that you guys have seen Lauren tweet about that cheers even if you don't make
the shot. Yeah.
Spent some quality time on that.
Yeah, but now he can make it, so it's not a liar anymore.
He understands that.
Yeah, and he loves it. Did he turn to you when he made a basket for a hug?
Of course.
Yeah, every time with me.
So,
and I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop doing this eventually.
Like,
you need to just know that making a basket is routine. I'm going to start shutting
when
off.
Ball is life. The Brownlow parenting strategy.
I mean, look, he's got to understand that making a basket is just part of it. Like, act like you've been there before, kid. You know?
Lauren wants her child, who isn't a full year old yet, to act like he's been there before.
Like, every time he makes a basket now, and the machine will be like, yay, I'll be like, oh, good job. And he turns to me for a hug. And I'm like, oh, that's really cute. But I'm also kind of like, oh, go make it.
Then stop telling him good job.
I know. I should just stop. Yeah. But he does turn and look at me like, I'm like, good, buddy.
Make four more.
Way to go.
Then you can have a snack.
See, it's almost like he's old enough now that he's starting to test limits a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
You probably noticed that too.
My friend has a child who is about 18 months old right now. So his birthday's, I don't know if I did the math right, year and a half-ish. His birthday's in October. So he's, I guess, 8 months older, mm-hmm. 7 months older than Alex. And he's just past him on the, like, mischievous scale.
Yeah.
And knows when he does something wrong and will look at you and like, wonder, are you gonna scold me or punish me or no, because I'm adorable? And, like, knows that.
See, I'm still trying to figure out how to handle, because he's just started throwing stuff that he's eating.
Yes, he threw that little squeezy pouch every single time he was done with it.
And I don't know.
Every single time.
I feel like he's testing a little bit. Like, I feel like he's like, so I'm trying to.
He is, because, like, as soon as I picked it up and gave it back to him, he would just do it. He would just keep eating it.
Yeah. And he'll drop, like, Cheerios or Puffs or something and then just look down at them and then look at me. And I'm like, you're not eating that. You need to understand that you're not eating that.
Like, this is how you lose your food.
The food goes bye-bye now. Like, that's what, but I see, I'm so desperate to get him to sit quietly for a few minutes that I'll end up just giving him some more, but I need to, like, start cracking down on that. I feel like, cause he's now, yeah, he used to just drop the stuff, but now he, like, looks at me like, what? And I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
We're going to have a showdown here, aren't
there
we?
There was definitely a point with the food where he was doing it on purpose. And I was just kind of like,
he ate a lot yesterday. Yeah.
He did, but with
he's a big eater.
He's a boy. So
yeah, he can eat. Like, we never can tell when he's full.
Really?
Yeah, because he doesn't ever act full. I think the only way I can tell now that he's full is because, like, even yesterday, I think I had given him, like, a total of, like, 8 ounces of food within, like, 20 minutes. And I'm like, okay, he's got to. But I kept giving him Cheerios and he kept eating them. And then all of a sudden he just kept, like, literally taking the Cheerios, putting them out to the side and dropping them. And I was like, okay, well, I guess he's not hungry anymore because he's dropping all the Cheerios now.
Probably not. Now that the food has become a toy.
But he'll eat anything. Like, it's unreal. He just keeps eating. And I'm like, how? Where
he's not big.
I know.
He's not heavy. He doesn't look like a kid who eats constantly.
I know, but he does. And he's always hungry. It's unreal. But I very much appreciate you stepping in to watch him. And we would have never been able to tell that it was your first time.
I've said it before. I love kids and I'm always open to hang out with your babies.
That's
not a cold call for you guys to call me and ask me to babysit your kids, by the way.
I told you when he showed up, and this is real, like, he had been feeling bad, so yeah. He was in a bad mood, and when you showed up, it was like one of the first times he had smiled all day.
He just wanted to hang out.
Yeah. I hope he was.
He didn't want to be left alone, and he was.
No, he didn't.
The thing was, he was clingy, but he didn't cry a lot, so.
No.
Whatever. Yeah. Played ball. I spoke a little Spanish.
Yeah.
And
there you go.
You know, another day.
There you go.
Another day, another dollar or whatever. But
yeah, you wouldn't accept any money from
that.
Well,
you know, I wouldn't. That's true.
Next time, if you do, you're going to get some.
Whatever. We're besties now.
Oh, okay. Well, that's been your regular glimpse into Lauren and Marilyn's personal lives. for this week.
This time they overlapped.
And that's about all for this week's topics and takes. We'll see you next week if they'll still have us.
We'll see.
You've been listening to the Topics and Takes podcast with WRALSportsFan.com's Lauren Bronlow and Marilyn Payne. A reminder that you can download this weekly podcast at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app on iTunes or the Google Play stores, or listen on Saturday mornings at 9 on 99.9 The Fan.